Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Coming to you from the Tony Renby Rock Auditorium at the Commonwealth Club, it's Week to Week, the political roundtable from Monday, June 4th, 2018. Now, welcome to our program tonight. Now, on Friday, political comedian Bill Maher criticized his friend Roseanne Barr for the racist tweet that ended her TV series. We all have heard about that. Bill Maher said her tweets were, quote, so full of racism, conspiracy theories, and personal attacks that they were described as abhorrent, bordering on presidential, unquote. I don't even know what he meant by
good
that.
Good one, John.
Yeah. I'm John Zipper, your host for Week to Week and the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial. On today's program, we're going to discuss the big primary election tomorrow and a raft of propositions. Of course, the Roseanne and Samantha Bee controversies, the latest on the president, children at the border, and more. And, of course, we'll end the evening with our live news quiz. The Commonwealth Club welcomes people with a wide range of views, so any opinions that are expressed here tonight are those solely of the speakers and not of the Commonwealth Club. Now, let's meet our panelists for today. Returning after far too long of an absence, on the far end of the stage there is Molly Riley. She's an assignment editor at HuffPost, and she's on Twitter at Molly Riley. So welcome back, Molly. Next to her is Bob Butler, a reporter at KCBS Radio, and you can follow him on Twitter at BobButler7. Welcome back. And next to me is C.W. Nevius, or Chuck Nevius, as you might know him. He's a columnist for the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, of course, a longtime former columnist, or a former longtime columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Is this an obituary? It says.
We remember him well. He was such a good man.
And fondly, I hope. Yeah.
He's on Twitter at CW Nevius. And in August, he will have a three-night performance of his one-man show. Where will it be?
It's a place called Piano Fight, which is downtown San Francisco, just a block away from the Powell Street BART station.
This program brought to you tonight by Chuck Nevius. So welcome back, Chuck.
Plenty of tickets available. I think.
Well, let's get on to our roundtable, and let's start with some of the large number of ballot measures that we're facing.
John,
on our election.
If yes. We could, can we take 10 seconds for Dwight Clark, who passed away this afternoon?
Tell us about this, yes. And he was just 61, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, 61 in ALS. I covered Dwight Clark when I was a sports columnist at the Chronicle in 80, and ALS was such a cruel disease for him because he was one of the most handsome men I've ever met in professional sports and obviously one of the most athletic. He won 5 Super Bowls. For him to lose his ability to walk and his ability to talk was just the cruelest thing ever. I saw him in September, mm-hmm. and I always tell the story. I remember interviewing him after a game. He was standing in front of his locker. He had a towel around his waist, and he was doing this with another towel. And somebody asked him a question. He turned around, and I thought to myself, if I spent a week in the spa, I would not look as good as this guy looks right now, having just toweled off his hair. He was such a great-looking guy. And he, in September at the training camp, he came through. And I'm sure he didn't weigh 140 pounds. He waved to us but didn't speak because – the vocal cords is a big part of ALS, and he found it hard to speak. And honestly, it just was wrenching to see that. And he passed away today at 61. Good idea, Bob.
Yeah, I'll remember the catch. That's iconic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's, with that, move on to talking about the election. Now, how many of you have already cast your ballots in this election? The vast majority of you, in fact. Who's going to vote still tomorrow yet? Quite a few. Quite a minute. Some of you raised your hands twice.
Wait, again?
I think that's illegal, folks.
Yeah.
But you can't be sure if anything's illegal anymore. So, well, let's start. And there are a lot of propositions. We probably can't talk about all of them, but I do want to run through them. On the statewide level, we have props 68 through 72. They include authorizing bonds for parks and natural resources protection. That's 68. Great. 69 would restrict certain transportation revenues that have to be then spent on transportation projects. 70 would force a supermajority vote in the legislature for tapping the cap and trade reserve fund. 71 would require successful ballot measures to take effect within 5 days of certified victory. And Prop 72 gosh, I don't even know if I understand this one. It would permit the legislature to exclude newly constructed rain capture systems from property tax reassessment requirement. Is that something like put on the ballot by the rain capture industry or something?
Believe it or not, there have been efforts to actually tell you that when water comes off your roof, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the state, the city, somebody. So there has been an effort. I talked to somebody about this several months ago where they actually are promoting that. And they say, yeah, people don't realize this, but there are some government officials who say that the rainwater doesn't belong to you. It belongs to government, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
So you're voting no?
I voted no. I'm not going to talk about anything else I voted for. I voted no on that.
Anything else on the statewide propositions that stood out for any of you? There is also a regional measure. Yes, thank you. Regional measure 3, which would raise the tolls on the Bay Bridge and 6 other Bay Area bridges with the money going for transportation effects. I'm seeing some people shake their heads. If I can ask you, who voted against it? Okay, that ballot's going to pass.
I don't know.
What do you think about it?
Well, you know, I did a forum on this over in Martinez, and that was the big issue they wanted to talk about, because Contra Costa County, you know, has been paying for BART for all these years, and we just got our BART extension to Antioch, and now there's no parking already. But it's a lot of the money. I looked at a lot of that money goes to Santa Clara County, you know, for BART to San Jose. And there's a school of thought is, why am I paying an extra bridge toll so the people in Santa Clara County who never paid into the BART system can get a BART extension? So I think there's a lot of controversy. That's not two-thirds, right? I think it's just a majority vote. I can't remember which it is, but it's very controversial, and I'm not too sure about that one.
Yeah, I want to say simple majority.
I think so.
I think it's simple majority.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But anything that hits people at the wallet is a tough sell, and it is a $3 increase over the next 7 years, I think it's by 2025.
Yeah, it stepped in.
$1 a year.
Right, and it's pretty much every bridge in the Bay Area except the Golden Gate Bridge, which is already at eight now. So it is a substantial increase for people, especially commuters. But on the flip side of that, it does raise, I think, $4.4 billion over the next 25 years. And there are, you know, improvement projects all across the Bay Area. But again, people who live in the immediate Bay Area, closer to the city, who would be using BART and Caltrain, are going to benefit more from those projects.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things on there that I think are good, like for my area, improving the Highway 4 242 interchange, which backs up from Highway 4 to 680 almost every day now, would be good. And there are a lot of other things on it that I think are positive, but I think it's that one sticking point about, why are we giving money to put an extension to San Jose when I can't even park at my new BART station?
Someone's asking if the San Jose extension was canceled, they're going to use buses instead.
As far as I know, I looked, there is money for the Warm Springs extension into San Jose. There's also money to get you from the Rod Diridon station to the BART station. So
I just point this out for the sake of pointing it out, and that is Rod Diridon station, of course, is named after the husband of the Commonwealth Club's president and CEO. So I just think that's got to be cool. Hey, honey, should we drive or take the train? Well, let's go to my station.
Let's get around Diridon.
Yes. Locally, of course, here in San Francisco, we have a lot of propositions. The one that is my absolute favorite, I think they put on there just to make Chuck's head explode, and that is Prop I, which would declare that the city won't steal sports teams from other cities. It expresses sorrow and apologizes for taking the Warriors from the East Bay.
They're a little late with that one, aren't they? Huh? Yeah. You know, well, have you been out to Mission Bay lately?
Well, and they're, of course, also mad at the 49ers leaving the city. Chuck, what do you think of this prop?
Well, it's a little known fact, and I think it's important that we bring it up, that every election in San Francisco has to have a pointless and meaningless that has no effect on anything whatsoever. But I would say, to Molly's point, that I live in the Mission Bay area, so I'm close to where they're building the arena. And I was out jogging, and I saw this guy riding a bike, and he was holding a yellow and blue sign that said, "Keep the Warriors in Oakland." And I stopped him, and I was talking to him, and I couldn't resist to say, "Have you looked behind you? There's a 6-story arena already built behind you." So that horse has kind of left the barn. But we want to express our sympathy for the fact that that's happening. But that's it's kind of the new world of professional sports, and yeah. that's probably the way it's going to go.
Okay. Yeah, my thought actually was, will there be a difference in voting between the football fans, who of course lost their team, and the basketball okay. fans in the city who are getting a team? Someone will do that study after the program. Well,
just the Warriors insist that it's 50-50, that half of the people that come to games now actually don't live in the East Bay. They live in the South Bay or San Francisco, and it won't make that much difference from there. It will be a state-of-the-art arena. There'll be lots and lots of concerts and so forth. I'll never be able to leave my house again, but I'm willing to do that for the common good.
Yes.
And I don't think that was part of the RM3, that they're going to have an actual BART station at Mission Bay.
As long as they name the station after me, I'm fine.
That's fine. Well, Zipper Station has a certain ring to it.
Zippy. Zippy. Yeah. I like it. You certainly couldn't name a Muni station Zippy.
Yeah. You mentioned San Francisco. There's one measure on the ballot. I think it's Measure E. Is that the one?
About flavored tobacco?
Flavored tobacco. And I love the Marlboro man who gets on there and talks about how bad it is to put restrictions on tobacco. How, you know, it's a terrible thing that, you know, we're also always trying to regulate things. We don't even want to regulate, you know, flavored tobacco. It's like, you know, dude, seriously? I can't vote for or against it, but I just think it's stupid to even oppose something like that.
And that one's really interesting, too, because this whole vaping phenomenon that's, you know, you read about all the time, and with, you know, kids in high school using flavored tobacco quite frequently. And the company that is the most popular for this young demographic is Juul, and they're based here in San Francisco. So it could be a situation where they are banned in their own home city.
They'll get the Uber treatment. Mm-hmm. There, of course, are some other local propositions on the use of tasers, raising a tax on commercial rents and using it either for childcare and education or for homelessness, things like that. Well, let's talk more about the primary election that's tomorrow. And let's stay with San Francisco and then move to the statewide. Of course, San Franciscans are going to be selecting the person who will fill out the rest of the late Mayor Ed Lee's term. And the polls I've seen have tended to be London Breed, then Mark Leno and Jane Kim, and possibly Angela Alioto. What are you folks seeing, and what do you expect? In fact, we got a question of whether or not we expect any upset votes on Tuesday. That's one area with not just ranked choice, and we have like three ranks you can choose. Molly, any thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, London Breed has been the clear front runner this entire campaign, and I think I've noticed, especially with people I'm friends with, really, they got to know her during that brief period where she was mayor, and then when they saw the mayorship taken away from her, that also made them more interested in her. So I think she's the one to beat here, but I think the whole ranked choice system is really going to make it hard to predict anything. If enough people, you know, decide to vote for Jane Kim and Leno, and have been campaigning together the past few weeks, that really could change the game for London Breed. So, and if their voters aren't ranking London Breed at all, that also will impact her total at the end of the day.
It's going to be interesting because Leno and Jane Kim are essentially the same candidate. You know, they have, and once again, in San Francisco, as David Chu said when he was running, we're all just different shades of blue. I mean, there's not a Republican candidate in this. So,
well, Richie Greenberg.
There's one. There is one.
Not a Republican point of view. But anyway, the three top people are not separated by much. And certainly, Leno and Kim are very similar. So the idea of them uniting together and saying, make me your number two, if you're going to vote for Leno, vote for me number two, that could upset everything. However, San Francisco has not elected a progressive mayor since Art Agnos. I'm not sure how it's going to work out.
This ranked choice voting, my experience with that, and I did a mayoral forum several years ago in Oakland, where there were 11 candidates on the stage. Talk about a dog and pony show. I mean, herding cats. It was really difficult. But that was the ranked choice voting for the first time in Oakland. And the odds-on favorite was the former President Pro Tem Don Parada, who everybody knew he was going to win. But because of ranked choice voting, Gene Kwan snuck in there. You just can't predict what's going to happen in an election like this.
I think what you'd like to have, if you could, is get it down to the two top candidates and then put them together, and let's have some real debates and see what we have. But with ranked choice, it's kind of up in the air. We don't know what we're going to get. You know, it may be decided by the third choice that you make on your ballot. And it kind of disenfranchises the voters. Well, the great example is Gavin Newsom and Matt Gonzalez, who was far, far back in the pack, but he finished second, so he ends up running against Gavin Newsom and ran a very effective campaign, which, I mean, people talk about to this day. I mean, I think that's the ideal. Let's get two top candidates, put them together, and then run a real campaign. And ranked choice doesn't allow you to do that because it's going to be a one-shot deal. In the interest of expediency, we're going to go with ranked choice. And I would just so much rather narrow the field down. Now let's have a real debate between the two candidates and go from there. But
that leads us right into another controversial election system here, which is the top two primary, which we have. And Molly, you've been talking a bit about this. It's obviously creating some headaches for the Democrats.
Yeah, I don't think Democrats are too happy about the top two system right now. The big goal for Democrats nationally this year is flipping the House of Representatives. And there are it will take 23 flips for them to do that. And in California, there are 14 potential seats that they could be flipping. And seven of those are districts that voted for Hillary Clinton and that hadn't voted for a Democrat since before World War II. So those are seen as really ripe districts for flipping. But what happened is Democrats got a little overeager. A lot of Democrats signed up to run historic numbers after Trump got elected. And there's a situation now in at least three of these districts where there might not be a single Democrat in any of these races after the primary tomorrow. So Democrats are kind of, you know, shooting themselves in the foot with this system. If they're locked out of these House races that could be pivotal to the House control, I don't see how this system stands for much longer.
Who are some of the Southern California Republicans who could benefit from this?
Well, Dana Rohrabacher, who is known as Russia's favorite congressman, is one. so that's one that would make a lot of Democrats pretty upset if he stayed in office. And then the other two, you know, it's their open seats because the two congressmen, Daryl Issa and Ed Royce, are retiring. And so these districts have had a lot of infighting on the Democratic side. There's been requests from the national campaign for Democrats to drop out of these races. So it's really been a big mess for the party.
Yeah, it's so bad that, like you said, the DNC came in and said, listen, can we coalesce around one candidate? And you have the, you know, the Clinton Democrats saying, okay, that's not a bad idea. The Bernie Democrats saying, oh, hell no. You're not going to take my choice. You did that to Bernie before. You're not going to do it to me. So I think that's one of the problems the Democrats have is that if they were to coalesce around one candidate, I think they'd have a really good chance of winning not just the primary election, but the general election too. But if you have people coming in now and saying, okay, I'm going to run as a Democrat, kind of like Bernie did. I'm going to run as a Democrat even though I'm independent. You know, I mean, we live in conspiracy theories. I'm wondering how many of these are really Republicans who decided to run as Democrats to muddy up the waters.
Oh, Bob.
I'm just putting it out there.
Oh, Bob.
Like our president, I have no proof. I just said it. All right? But you just have to wonder because there are so many.
Have you tweeted that? It was,
no.
Yeah, I'm hearing.
People are saying.
Yes.
I'll give you a Warriors analogy. Okay? The score is tied at the very end of the game, and everybody wants to be the person to make that shot. Okay? We don't want everybody to make that shot. We want Steph Curry to make that shot. All you other guys, step aside, give the ball to Steph Curry. It's just that tendency. We wanted engagement. You know, this is terrible. It's a terrible situation. This president is a problem. We've got to get engaged. We've got to get involved in this. So everybody jumped in. But you have to be, there has to be perspective. And I think that's what we're missing. And Molly pointed out the other day when we were talking about this, that it really could be a problem for, you know, it's too much of a good thing.
Mm-hmm. The top two primary, of course, is also very much in evidence in the gubernatorial race primaries and the U.S. Senate primary. Gavin Newsom and Dianne Feinstein, both widely expected to be in the general election for those two races, respectively. But, you know, will Gavin Newsom face fellow Democrat Antonio Villaraigosa or Republican John Cox? Dianne Feinstein, is she going to, you know, face fellow Democrat Kevin DeLeon, or is she going to face Republican James Bradley? I mean, what do we think? I mean, there's actually now been a lot of hand-wringing even over that, where the expected winner is likely to be a Democrat, but even some Democrats are saying, you know what, we've been robbed of a real debate. This is, talk about, I mean, you know, Bob's conspiracy theory, but we have seen Antonio Villaraigosa running ads to boost Travis Allen, another Republican, in order to take John Cox down in the polls. Mm-hmm. I mean, and of course, you know, Gavin Newsom's folks building up John Cox to knock out Antonio Villaraigosa from the top two. It's not really governance and politics at its best.
Yeah. You know, I think the Trump endorsement for John Cox was the biggest gift to Gavin Newsom's campaign because they've, you know, they've been running ads saying, oh, you know, John Cox, he's an NRA supporter, he's a Trump supporter, Trump loves him. And that's exactly what Republican voters are looking for in a candidate, some of them. So that's, you know, kind of looks like an endorsement from a Republican perspective. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that if there is a Republican in the gubernatorial race, that will increase GOP turnout in the general election, which could also play into these House races, that if people are voting down the party line, they'll vote for these Republicans in the House districts, and it'll hurt this blue wave that the Democrats are trying to achieve. So a lot of people in the party are not super happy with Newsom right now.
But as Newsom says, any Republican will do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happy to run against any Republican. Yeah. That would be fine. And we were talking before. I had not heard the term until today, but they're calling it a jungle primary,
mm-hmm.
where it's just those two, whoever the top two people are, and it creates this odd dynamic where you're trying to boost the person from, if you're a Democrat, the Republican Party, because that's who you'd love to run against, rather than Villagrosa, who might very well give him a run for his money. Mm-hmm. He's been a... You know, he's had some problems, but he's been a mayor in a major city. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That doesn't seem like a great yeah. plan to me. I'm not sure that that's going to be sustainable.
Well, the last poll that I saw this morning, and I'm sure they do a lot of polls, so don't take this as gospel of what all the polls are saying, but the poll I saw this morning had, you know, Gavin Newsom, solid lead, John Cox, second place, and Antonio Villaraigosa was actually quite far back.
Yep.
You know, yep. He, I mean, it's been said his, and we were talking about this on our last week, 2 week, you know, his base or what support he needs is to draw on that large Southern California Latino vote. And if he's not going to do that, if Donald Trump, who has inspired so much, you know, Hispanic political engagement, is not going to turn people out to vote for Antonio Villaraigosa, mm-hmm. he doesn't have a chance.
And people have counted on that before. It's like the idea of the youth vote. We're going to get this great youth vote, and then it doesn't materialize.
Yeah,
and that's
because you can only legalize marijuana once. So,
but you might forget you did. So,
any predictions? Who will face the two front runners on those two races?
Gavin, I think it'll be Newsom for
Gavin,
sure,
who,
and then
right.
Gavin. Cox.
I think Gavin and Diane definitely will be in the election mm-hmm. in November, but. Who they're going to face with all these shenanigans and machinations, you really can't call it. It's just like the ranked choice.
Well, you're saying Newsom and Cox?
Yeah, that's what I think. And then I think it'll be Kevin DeLeon. I think, you know, he hasn't performed quite as well as some progressives have hoped. He's kind of dragging in the polls and the fundraising lately, but I think he has that level of name recognition that very few Republican candidates have. And
as for Feinstein, we talked about this before here, but she was not 100% committed, mm-hmm. but you know what her people basically said is, we're going to go ahead and run. We're going to go ahead and raise money. We'll see how it goes. A viable candidate appears, and none has. Yeah. So let's go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do we get rid of ranked choice and top two voting? Very bad idea with unintended consequences.
These
has to go back to voters.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah it has to. Mm-hmm. Voters have yeah. to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was reading this morning on the way in here that talking about the Southern California races, they said the solution is to have a top two primary with ranked choice voting. That's what somebody was saying. If you had a top two with ranked choice, you could rank your selections, and that might be a way to make sure that the Democrats have somebody in the election in November. Now, good luck in getting that done between now and tomorrow.
Well, let's talk about our next topic, which is what everyone is talking about. Last week, Roseanne, the woman and the show, had a very bad week. She tweeted a racist comment about former Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett, and she followed that up by spreading a crackpot rumor about billionaire investor George Soros having been a Nazi collaborator and that Chelsea Clinton married a Soros nephew. For the record, the Soros rumor has been debunked multiple times, and Clinton is not married to a Soros nephew. Before the day was out, ABC had canceled her TV series, and that was probably one of the quickest reactions of corporate giant corporation that I've seen in a long time. Bob, what do you think about the controversy and about ABC's response?
Well, the controversy, I mean, this is normal now. You can go out there on social media and you can say anything as racist and vile as you want. And because it's been normalized by the president, it's okay. And God help anybody that tries to say that you can't do it. You can't take away my First Amendment rights. But I think somewhere I read, you can have First Amendment rights, but it comes with consequences. Say anything you want, but you have to suffer the consequences. I was surprised ABC reacted so quickly because the show was getting good ratings. And God forbid you get rid of a show that has good ratings, but I think it really sends a statement. It reminds me of the Don Imus situation years ago when he, what he said about the Rutgers women's basketball team. You got the people in positions of power, like Ken Chenault at American Express, as I'm pulling my ads. You know, Paula Madison, who was the executive vice president for diversity and inclusion at GE, she got on the ball and said, "Nah, we can't have this." You know, CBS, their senior VP of diversity, Josie Thomas, said, "You know what? We just can't have this." And it was the employees of these companies who said, "Nah, we can't have this. If I said this, and any of these companies of employees said that, they'd be fired." That's why Imus lost his job. So ABC, I think, was reacting. I'm not going to say appropriately, but I'm not surprised they did what they did. It does not hurt that the new president coming in over ABC Entertainment is a black woman.
Channing Dungey or Dungey, yeah. I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. She apparently made the decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, the statement came directly from her. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's obviously impressive that ABC canceled it that quickly. They were getting 19 million viewers a week. But at the same time, they greenlit this show in the first place. And Roseanne has been Roseanne for years now. And she has openly a conspiracy theorist. She's been saying racist things on Twitter for years, and they knew what they were getting. So I think, you know, they deserve credit, but not all that much credit.
Yeah, I mean,
And at the same time, too, you know, they saw the model of this show was a success. So I think we're going to see programs similar to Roseanne coming from less controversial figures in programming. So I think that'll be a trend going forward.
They're actually trying to, they're thinking about trying to redo the show, making Sarah Geller the star of the show.
Right.
So they want to, the people I feel bad for are the co-stars, the writers, mm-hmm. the producers, the folks who lost their jobs because of Roseanne's, you know, motor mouth, you know, on Twitter. So if they do keep the show in that way, I think that'd be great.
Well, I mean, two things. The president stood up and said, "Did you see Roseanne's ratings? That's about us." And ABC did do a courageous thing. Good for them. But Tom Arnold, Roseanne's former husband, said, "I tried to warn him. I told you. She's racist. She's been racist for years." They knew they were hoping to walk a fine line, and she wouldn't cross it. She did. They made a courageous decision, but it's still a pretty cynical decision if you're going to say, because they were getting great, not good ratings, they were getting great ratings.
It was a top-rated show on the network.
Yep.
Yeah, as Molly noted, she does have a history. USA Today noted some of her past tweets, such as sharing videos about the ridiculous Pizzagate conspiracy theory or accusing a Parkland, Florida school shooting survivor of doing a Nazi salute. Neither, of course, is true. She pushed a theory that the death of a DNC staffer was being covered up, that Obama and Clinton had killed more innocent people than anyone in U.S. history. So if those reflected her personal beliefs, she's maybe eligible to return to TV as co-host of Alex Jones' show.
Well, how did that job interview go? You know, when you sat down with her and said, you know, do you have any odd beliefs or thoughts about that?
Well, and let me ask you this. How much allowance do you make, if any, for mental illness? We've gone downtown. Yep. We've seen people standing on the corner spouting offensive and occasionally obscene things. And we generally assume this person's crazy. But
there is a line of decorum which cannot be crossed. It was crossed. They canceled the show. But at some point, you have to say, what were you thinking? You know, I mean, you could have made that show without Roseanne and have found some a brassy, outspoken actress who could say lots of things that would be Archie Bunker-ish.
But would be a better actress.
Yes. Right. And it. Certainly a better singer than the national anthem. We know that. But, yeah, I think, you know, they tried to have it both ways. They tried to play it with her because they knew she's controversial, and it created ratings. And luckily, as I said, they made the courageous decision, the right decision.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
Okay. So last week, political comedian Samantha Bee used a vulgarity to criticize Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka. Bee also apologized, but Trump and some of his supporters are saying, why wasn't she fired? So what do you think about that, or were they similar things?
I think if you just look at all the photos from the Trump rallies, all the T-shirts about Hillary Clinton, and you talk to Ted Nugent, they protest too much, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah, like Bob said, Ted Nugent got a White House reception and mm-hmm. picture in the Oval Office.
That's true.
And, you know, I think equating what Samantha Bee said with what Roseanne said is just completely off base. You know, it's one thing to say something vulgar and insulting. It's completely something else to say something hateful and racist and purposefully hateful and racist. So I think it's apples and oranges. But I think this is how the culture wars are playing out right now. You know, it's something happens on the right and then the right looks for an example on the left that they can equate it to and say, well, you guys are doing it too. You know, we see it with, you know, the accusations against Donald Trump. Republicans can point to Al Franken. You know, it's these things that aren't the same. And he did resign. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, and he's
no longer but in Congress. Why give them ammunition? Why do that? I watch Samantha Bee. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watch her all the time. I think it's very funny. But why do that? Why? You know that's a place where you don't want to go. Mm-hmm. And all you're doing is giving validation to you're giving them an opportunity to say, look, you're just as bad. And she's got to be smarter. She's got to be funnier. And funny is going to carry the day with that thing. And that wasn't funny.
And there are plenty of other things she could have called her that would not have been.
And made the same point.
Yeah.
I do think that the timing was, you know, that was her biggest mistake, in my opinion, was the timing. I don't think if she had said it a week earlier, I don't think anyone had picked up on it. But because it was after the Roseanne thing, people were looking for an example on the left of something else that was vulgar. And she gave it right to them.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, wait, but we're not done.
Oh.
So there's no shortage of outrage to go around. MSNBC host Joy Reid, who was basically weathering a previous controversy. People had found old blog posts on her blog that had what they call homophobic comments on them. She said it was caused by hackers. Well, now she's taking responsibility for old blog posts from her old blog, in which she promoted a conspiracy theory that the U.S. was behind the 9/11 attack, and for sharing an old insulting image of Senator John McCain. Reid says she has evolved since then, and quote, "I'm a better person today than I was over a decade ago," unquote. Sean Hannity, of all people, stood up for her and said, look, lay off TV personalities. Partly, yes, he is living in a glass house, but
I'll say.
Any thoughts on Joy Reid?
Well, I know Joy, and we do change. And, you know, you think about 10 years ago, something you wrote on social media that you thought nobody would ever see, or you had no idea it would exist this long. You know, I mean, she was wrong for doing it. She's apologized for it. She has a show on MSNBC on the weekends that runs from 7 to 9 here. And she did a whole show apologizing for those blog posts. And, you know, I don't think I did it, but if I did, I apologize. And she had people on from the gay community, and they basically said, listen, we understand. You know, you're not the only one that said this. The difference is other people who have said these things, they still believe these things, and they'll double down on it.
Okay, but don't say those things. Yeah. And when those things come to light, don't say I was hacked.
Right.
Yeah. I think she botched her response completely.
Don't you?
Having her tech expert give quotes to the media about the hacking that was happened on the Wayback Machine. You know, it was pretty absurd excuses for it. And I think owning your own behavior is key in these situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We ask everybody else to do it. I mean, she's owned it, but yeah, you're right.
It took a while.
Yeah. And we may have seen her having learned that lesson by this go around saying, yeah, I wrote them. I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I've changed since then.
Well, I'll bet she's learned that lesson. I think that's true.
But it makes you wonder, what else did she write? I mean,
more conspiracy theories, Bob.
I'm sure there are people right now who are spending all day scrubbing going through her old blog posts and finding what's out there. Well, let's move away from the world of wild tweets and talk about our president.
Our president. Here we go.
So Donald Trump, of course, we all know he promised to meet North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un.
Who's a great guy, by the way.
He's a great guy, yes. He has nicer things to say about Kim Jong-un than he does about, you know, our longest economic and military allies. But He did, however, meet with another Kim Kardashian, who made a plea for him to pardon someone who was in jail for a first-time drug crime. Now, no word yet on whether Kim Kardashian was successful, but the president did issue a pardon last week. Bob, Trump pardoned Dinesh D'Souza, a far-right author, documentarian, former religious school president. What do you think about the pardon and what it says about the way this power is being used?
Well, I think it's clear the power is being used so that anybody who was being called before Bob Mueller and has any kind of crime, they see, oh, he'll just pardon me. But I think in D'Souza, I mean, so he came on, he was on, I think, Anderson Cooper, and he basically said, the reason I was prosecuted is because I said bad things about Obama and they came to get me. And it just amazes me that the extent and the legal maneuvering in somebody's mind, what they go through to blame things on Obama, to blame things on Hillary Clinton. I mean, I listen to conservative radio between 9 and noon sometimes.
You don't have to apologize.
Well, but I want to, you know, I'm a journalist. I want to know what people are thinking. And I you know, I watch Fox sometimes and I look at some of the conservative posts. And the maneuvering that they do to blame, right now, Spygate is Obama's fault. Because the Russians were attacking the election and he did not do enough to stop them, despite the fact that Obama wanted to go public with a bipartisan statement that Mitch McConnell refused to go along with, so he didn't do it. But it just amazes me that what they do, and D'Souza saying that, well, Obama, I said bad things about him, that's why this happened. No, dude, you were wrong, you were convicted, you're in prison.
And you pled guilty.
I was going to say, exactly.
Yeah. So
he pled guilty. This was not.
But it's just amazing, and that's where we are right now with everything, with the investigation into Russia, everything else. It's like, you know, if I'm guilty, I will pardon myself, but I'm not going to pardon myself because I'm not guilty. I've done nothing wrong. And there are people that will believe that, but it's only about 27% of the population, which that's the base for the president right now. And people don't understand that when they talk about the people, they're not talking about a lot of the people in this country. They're talking about people that voted for him and support him. And that's, like I said, 27% of the country. So, again, you just have to shake your head and say, I'm not surprised.
Molly, he also, of course, a pardoned former Arizona sheriff, Joe Arpaio. Do you agree this is basically signal sending and score settling?
I do, yeah. And I think, you know, if you look at who he has pardoned so far, you know, Scooter Libby before this one. And these aren't going through the normal pardon process. When President Obama was pardoning and doing commutations of sentences, these are all cases that had gone through the Justice Department review process, that there had been recommendations that maybe these were unfair sentences, that something had gone wrong throughout the case. There had been, you know, a legal backing to each of those moves. These are strictly political. Or, you know, you have Sylvester Stallone recommending that he pardon Jack Johnson. So he's listening to people. We'll see what happens with Kim Kardashian. But
you mean Kim Thong-un?
I was not a fan of that headline, personally.
It was a New York Post front page line.
Yeah.
I cannot believe you said that.
I will say about the Kim Kardashian thing, I think she got, you know, that picture was so widely mocked of her going, but you know, she's doing something with her fame, you know, that she could just be sitting in Calabasas.
Yeah. She was not doing something to help some other famous person. She was doing something to actually help someone who,
A woman who's been in jail for unfair conviction. So I think it'll be interesting. He might pardon Martha Stewart. He might pardon Blagojevich. So it'll be interesting to see how this power continues to play out forward.
Martha Stewart, of course, was jailed for insider trading. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was basically jailed for being a former Illinois governor. And kind of speaks for itself.
What was interesting was Chris Christie was on the Sunday talk shows, and he said, I'd be very cautious about pardoning Blagojevich because that's a guy who was the governor who basically said, you want this, what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. And that's a lot different than I think Martha Stewart was adding too much sugar to a recipe or something. I think was that the
well, but, she lied.
Yeah,
she lied.
Yeah, with insider trading. But yeah, I mean, I think you can this pardon train can get ahead of itself.
What do Martha Stewart and Rod Blagojevich have in common?
They both pardoned.
What's their common connection to Donald Trump?
The Apprentice.
They were contestants on the Celebrity Apprentice. That's
right. And Martha Stewart was prosecuted by James Comey. So that's another
little
of that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Small world.
Yeah. Someone in the audience asks, where are the sane Republicans and Democrats? They're so silent on so many things. I wonder, I want to put that in particular in regard to the tweet of the president today saying he absolutely has the power to pardon himself.
Didn't see a lot of Republicans commenting on that today. I saw a video of Ted Cruz getting questioned on Capitol Hill today, and he had a long pause before he answered, and then he said he wasn't familiar with that part of constitutional law. So I think there's going to be a lot of that dodging going on.
Not familiar.
You got to get him on. This is the one time where you have to ask him a specific question. He can pardon himself. And any Republican or Democrat that agrees with that, I hope they're not running for re-election. Although the Republicans, they'll probably get re-elected anyway. But I mean, this is so distasteful. This is so outrageous that the president's saying he can pardon himself. That I absolutely have the ability to do, the authority to do that. And people have told me I do. Nixon, before he stepped down, he went to the Justice Department and says, "Can I pardon myself?" "No, you can't." And he resigned. This is going to end up in the Supreme Court, I'm pretty sure, if he keeps going.
But I think at the end of the day, it's going to be about economics. And I think a bigger issue is the tariffs. I think a lot of this stuff is going to be a sideshow. He's tweeting all kinds of things. I can pardon myself. This tariff thing could be a lot more serious. And to hear Trudeau in Canada, to hear Merkel in Germany, to hear our partners. I mean, for Trudeau to say Canadian soldiers have died next to American soldiers, and you're going to put a tariff on our products? He did. That, to me, is the kind of thing that is going to make a difference. And a lot of this will be sound and fury, and you know, who knows what he's going to say next. But that's something that may make a difference. And for Mitch McConnell, for other people to come out and say, this is a big mistake, I don't like this. I think that's where your seat-of-the-pants presidency starts to fall apart.
Yeah, because with the tariffs on the steel, the solar industry, they now can't get some of the parts they need. And there's a lot of people working in solar. And guess what? Some of those folks are being laid off. So it's going to start affecting people, and especially the tariffs in farm country. These are people that voted for the president. And if all of a sudden they have a hard time, some of them will justify continuing to support him, but others are going to say, well, wait a minute. You know, I worked for Harley-Davidson. You came here and said you're going to keep my plant open. And now I'm being laid off because they're closing my plant and moving it overseas. Some of these people are going to really be upset, and we'll see what happens in November.
Well, and you saw, those of you who took the news quiz out in the library before the program saw the Koch brothers are putting millions of dollars into fighting the tariffs decision. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But, you know, if that wing of the Republican, you know, the free trade group finally says, oh, wait, this is not an occasional decision that goes against us, right, but something that could really collapse the international trade system.
I think a lot of stuff's going on over here, but the economy's going great.
At the moment, yeah.
But if that doesn't happen, and if it's directly traced back to decisions made by a spur-of-the-moment president, I think then you're in trouble.
Now, this is not Trump-specific, but you mentioned the Supreme Court, so I'll use that as my segue point. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court handed out a ruling in favor of the Colorado baker who didn't want to make a cake celebrating a same-sex wedding. Molly, any thoughts?
Yeah, so what's important to know about this decision, it is a narrow ruling, so it does not set a precedent or a standard for cases going forward. But what I thought was really interesting was Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote the dissent, and it was her and Sotomayor that co-signed on that. And what she pointed out in her argument was that the cake that this person ordered was a wedding cake. It was not a pro-gay cake. It had no political message on the cake. It was just a cake purchased by a gay person for their wedding. And the case that the Supreme Court cited in the majority opinion was someone who had ordered a cake that had, I'm not sure exactly what the message was, but it was something hateful. It was maybe a curse word, and the bakery wouldn't make the cake because it was vulgar. And so that's something that they wouldn't make that cake for anyone. And it had nothing to do with who ordered it. And so she said that there's a difference there. This isn't the same sort of thing. So it's a really interesting case to look at. I think it'll be interesting to see how the Supreme Court, it seems inevitable that cases like this are going to get up there And we'll see how they decide in the future on these and if there is a precedent set.
And there was a lot of thought that they bent over backwards to be respectful to same-sex marriage, to LGBT, which, again, 10 years ago with the Supreme Court, would you have seen that happening? Suddenly they're trying to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Donald Trump Jr., of course, missed the point.
Yes.
Oh, Donnie. 72 doesn't seem very narrow to me, but it was a narrow ruling because it was a very specific ruling about that. And they made a point to say, this has nothing to do with same-sex marriage. Right. So I think, you know, it's a news story, but it's still reflective of the progress that's been made.
Yeah, and they also talked about the Human Rights Commissioner who had some very, very disparaging things to say about the Baker's religion. And it's one of the reasons why they said, no, we're going to have to this is not going to fly. So I think anybody that wants to get a wedding cake can still get a wedding cake. It is interesting that the Supreme Court is, as you said, talk about night and day. And we're talking about conservative justices, you know, who basically said, okay, you don't have to do this cake, but don't maybe not do it again.
Well, and what you just said was really interesting, that the statements of this commissioner, this guy in Colorado that he had made, played a big part in their interpretation of what was going on. So all these cases we're expecting will eventually hit the Supreme Court about Donald Trump's various moves and motives, whether it's about Russia or immigration and such like that. He's got such a large history, Twitter history than Joy Reid does, that people will be able to certainly be mining that. And the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled lopsidedly saying, yeah, that stuff counts, should actually be a sobering moment in the White House. Well, one other thing before we move on to our last item for the night, and that is, Chuck, the NFL issued a new ruling.
Yes.
On the treatment of football players who kneel during the national anthem.
Yes, they did. Yes.
What was their ruling, and what do you think about it?
It's uncanny how the owners of the NFL are able to shoot themselves in the foot. It's really, they've got dead aim. It's really remarkable. As you know, a large number, the Chicago Tribune estimated that 200 players at different times were taking a knee before football games. A lot of people saw this as the end of civilization as we know it. But in fact, it had become pretty much routine. They were doing it, it was being televised, and we were moving on. For some reason, and the reason I believe is in the White House, Donald Trump, the NFL owners felt they had to make this strong statement. And every time they do that, they sound more and more like what their most virulent critics call them, which is plantation owners. And they said, you fellas just go ahead and have your old protest, but be sure you do it out of sight of anybody, okay? Because we want to get back to football. I'm sure that there is a group of people who follow football who are offended by these protests. But this is a solution looking for a problem. This was not a big deal. And I know the players were concerned about how the movement had fractured at the end of the year. I talked to Eric Reed, who was at the 49ers, and he felt like things were going in a different direction. But it really had become less and less of an issue until now. And to reignite this now, at this point, is just such an example of tin-eared logic. It's kind of unbelievable. Certainly they have to concern themselves with the constituents of the people who buy the tickets. And there may be some very conservative people. But the people who are playing the game are largely African-American, are largely feeling that they're being disenfranchised. And for the owners to treat this as a public relations problem is just stupid. I'm sorry. It's just stupid. And it's a winner for Donald Trump. I mean, he has said it. He said to Jerry Jones, this is a winning issue for me, but it's not a winning issue for the NFL. And to his credit, Jed York from the 49ers abstained. He said, I'm not voting for this. And Mark Davis, too, from the Raiders. That's right.
The issue that Kaepernick was trying to publicize is a real serious issue. Just ask the player from Milwaukee who a couple of weeks ago
Sterling Brown,
who was basically arrested
and tased
over a parking ticket. I mean, it's just crazy the kind of things that as an African American man I have to worry about. You know, I mean, I've never had a problem with the cops pulling me over and, you know, being, and I'm respectful and everything else. And some of these guys, who have been victimized. Sure, they might have been criminals, but do you have to lose your life over stealing a stick of gum? I don't think you do. The players who very often don't say anything about these kinds of issues are starting to become, as we say, woke. Their consciousness is arising, and they think that this is a very respectful way to bring light to this issue. And to blow it up the way it's been blown up by the president and people who say, you know, I was on the Hornet, and this veteran said, if I see Kaepernick, I want 5 minutes in the room with him. And it's like, dude, you're 80 years old. What are you going to do? I mean, but this is the visceral reaction people are having to something, and they're just totally ignoring why they're doing it. They don't care. The owners don't care why they're doing it. If the owners would come out and say, you know what, this is a problem. You know, we're going to take this problem on. The players would say, okay, and they wouldn't have to kneel. I think what they ought to do now is get black gloves and stand with their hand over their heart during the national anthem. Every one of them, like this. They're respecting the flag, but but when they find out what they're doing, they'll come out and say, oh, you can't do that either. So
I think they should do is arrest everyone who's buying a hot dog during the national anthem. Because there's a lot of people that aren't paying attention. I've been to those games. Don't tell me that, you know?
Shut down the concession stands during the anthem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell people they have to go back to their seats.
And, of course, what they're protesting is the rights and the duties and all of that the anthem and the flag supposedly stand for. Molly, when you showed up today, you had some breaking news on this. What happened?
Well, the Philadelphia Eagles were set to visit the White House tomorrow, and as I'm sure you all know, a lot of teams have had some issues with going to the White House after winning their championships. The Warriors didn't go at all. You know, even when the Patriots went last year, some people didn't go. And so with the Eagles, it was looking like very, very few people were going to show up. There were several players who had said we're not going at all. There were some who were saying, well, I'll go if most people are going, but maybe not if they aren't. And so today, around 4 o'clock, President Trump puts out a statement to the White House press list saying, you know what? If not all of them are going to come, then I don't want them here at all. And just called the whole thing off, and he's going to have a reception for the fans, he said. So he's invited some Eagles fans. I'm not sure who these fans are, but they will allegedly be at the White House for a ceremony.
But you have to apply, and if you didn't vote for him, you can't go.
Well, and I think to save us a little time, let's just disinvite the Warriors right now, because they're not going.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting, you know, he turned it around as being about the anthem, and I think it was really about his ego. He didn't want to have an empty room.
Well, it's all about his ego. Yeah. That's the thing. It's. Mm-hmm.
But that is the thing. I think you get to disagree with the protest, but what you don't get to do is mischaracterize the protest. Mm-hmm. This protest is not about disrespecting veterans or the flag. Mm-hmm. You know, this is people saying unarmed black men are getting shot by the police, and we're upset about this, and because we're socially conscious and we have a platform. I mean, Colin Kaepernick sat down for the national anthem, and a veteran said to him, that seems disrespectful. I would rather see you kneel. And he said, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that.
Because that's what they, in the military, you take a knee. You play football in high school, what does the coach say? Take a knee. You take a knee. Mm-hmm. So taking a knee is not disrespectful. I'm a veteran, okay? I didn't fight, but I fought to give people the right to do these kinds of things. It's a peaceful protest. So to say that it's anything but is total BS.
On that note, let's briefly talk about another controversy that has been the issue of children being separated from their parents at the border when they're trying to enter the country undocumented. And Bob, you tweeted something recently about these claims that of 1,500 missing children.
Well,
yes.
You know, you saw these pictures of these kids who were sleeping in cell blocks, basically. And there were those who were trying to people to believe that these kids who are missing are kids who are taken from their parents at the border, and they're being put into these cell blocks. Well, the kids being taken from their parents are basically infants and toddlers and, you know, 4, 5, and 6 years old. These kids are clearly teenagers who are sleeping in the cell blocks. This actually was a picture taken in 2014 for kids who came unaccompanied, you know, across the border without their parents, and they're being put into detention facilities, so that's where they were sleeping. The missing kids are folks who had come across the border, and ICE or Homeland Security had basically put them into foster homes, and they've lost track of which foster homes they're in. But the kids who are coming across the border now and being taken from their parents, we don't know where they are, and that's the crisis.
Well, so two stories got conflated on Twitter, and there was this whole hashtag, where are the children? Mm-hmm. And there were, it was the unaccompanied minors that they lost track of, but the lost track of was sort of a loose term. It was, you know, they might have made a welfare call to the foster home and they didn't pick up and there was no follow up, and that got checked off as a missing person. So in a lot of cases, these kids are not missing. They're in these homes. And a lot of advocates were saying on Twitter this weekend that this actually is maybe not a bad thing that ICE isn't tracking these kids. You know, like if you are an undocumented immigrant in America, you probably don't want ICE knowing where you are at all times. So that part of it, I think, is a little less scary than what it looked like. The part that, you know, I think is upsetting to see is the separation at the border of parents and children. And that is what Trump is blaming it on Democrats, which is
blaming Obama.
Yeah. And which is just, you know, this is a policy that they've instituted, this zero tolerance policy at the border, where if you cross the border and you're undocumented, you are going to get prosecuted for illegal immigration. And they then, the children go into care and the parents are detained.
Yeah. Senator Merkel from Oregon went to one of the detention centers and wanted to get in to check on the conditions there, and they wouldn't let him in. They called the police on him, threatened to arrest him.
Mm-hmm. It's tangential, but there are now reports that there are also fewer reports of domestic violence because people are afraid to call the police for domestic violence, which is exactly what we talked about in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's exactly the debate in the Board of Supervisors, is that women are going to be afraid to report domestic violence because they don't have papers and they're going to be deported. And they literally had that happen. People would show up and say, okay, I understand you have a report, but first of all, let's see your papers.
On that happy note.
I'm sorry.
Well, let's see if we can bring up spirits. We're going to hand out some chocolate. This is our news quiz. If you think you know the answer, raise your hand. I'll call on you. You can shout it out. If you're right, then Angela will give you some chocolate. If you're wrong, try again. But if you do win, then let other people win for the rest of the game. So, first question. A billionaire German businessman, he's known as the Screw King. It's because of he deals in screws, not... Get it out of the gutter, Chuck. Okay, seriously.
Hardware.
Yes. He said he won't invest anymore in the United States until what happens? Anyone see this story?
I can, so many ways to go wrong.
I can kind of guess.
The answer is not innuendo.
All right.
Nobody saw this. I'll just give it to you. He won't do it until Donald Trump leaves office. The tariffs and the ally bashing is starting to affect. Saudi Arabia just issued 10 of the first what? So rewind, raise your hand, I'll call on you.
They have to split the bag.
We'll do another one here. The goalie for Tunisia's World Cup soccer team has an interesting way to break the daily fast for Ramadan. What does he do, sir? He fakes an injury right at sunset. His teammates can go to the side, get some snacks. That's right. As opposed to all the other soccer players who never fake an injury. Never happens. The campaign of actress and New York gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon was red-faced after repeatedly misspelled a word in a campaign email. What word did they misspell? Did anyone see this story? No? No one? The city of Ithaca. They spelled it I-T-H-I-C-A. Okay, we've got more, don't worry. An anonymous bidder will pay $3.3 million to have lunch with whom? Sir, your hand was going up right away.
The man from Omaha.
That's right. Warren Buffett. Berkshire Hathaway. Hope they don't go to his favorite place, Dairy Queen, or that guy way overpaid. Disappointment. A 14-year-old Texas student won the Scripps National Spelling Bee last Thursday. What was the winning word?
Oh.
It's Koinonia.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give it to her because she pronounced it. Koinonia. I'm there, whatever. He could spell it. I can't even pronounce it, but you got her right. So right there in the second row.
Can you use it in a sentence?
It's a Greek word referring to spiritual or Christian communion. Koinonia or something like that. Look it up, folks. Okay. Author James Patterson. His new thriller has an unusual co-author. Who is it? Okay. Ma'am, way in the back in the white. Sorry?
Bill Clinton.
That is correct. Next question. Members of Oakland's First Congregational Church are promising to never, or almost never, do what? Call the police. That's correct. They said they're not going to call the police. Who is the state of Vermont willing to pay $10,000 to? Sir. Anyone who will move there and, right, working from home. The whole key is to try to get younger people who are kind of techies to get them in there and replenish the population or something. I don't know. Evangelist Jesse Duplantis is pleading with his followers to help him get what? Sorry?
A jet.
Actually, his fourth jet. He already has three. This would just be a $54 million jet. He is a believer in the so-called prosperity gospel, which believes that Jesus wants you to be rich. It is also known as name it and claim it. Okay. Just hours before he left office on Friday, Missouri Governor Eric Greitens signed a bill that made what a crime? Anybody? Ma'am. Revenge porn, which happens to be what caused
really?
Him to be pushed out of office.
Really?
How much did a Florida jury award the family of a 30-year-old father of three who was shot and killed? Actually, you're correct. It was $4, but $1 for the mother to pay for funerals and then $1 for each of the family. But you're exactly right because they said that because the man they determined was responsible for his death, 99% of his death, because he was drunk and black, so naturally. Therefore, the police department was only responsible for paying 1% of that, which is a total of 4 cents. And in fact, that could be reduced to zero.
On appeal, right?
Yeah. The 30-year-old man, remember in New York State, whose parents took him to court to get him to move out of his house? He finally moved out, but not before calling the police. I got someone on both ends. I'm going to go with someone there because I have not gone over there. Okay, you're right. He called the police on his father before he left because his father wouldn't let him go back into his house to get a Lego that belonged to the son of the 30-year-old man.
Oh, God.
Those family gatherings at Christmas have got to be the most awkward things ever. Okay, one last question. Ubiquitous lawyer Gloria Allred is representing five former employees suing what Texas organization? Yes, they're suing the Houston Texans NFL team. They claim they are paid about 10 cents per hour, and they've been harassed and assaulted by team officials.
And they've been forced to serve as like pseudo escorts for players.
Yes.
But if they date a player, they get fired.
Really? Wow, and they can't take a knee either. Well, look, we'll have more news quiz questions, more chances to earn chocolate, and, of course, lots more to talk about in 3 weeks on Tuesday, June 26th. And, of course, you can find our week-to-week news quiz on our website. Thank you to our great panelists, Molly Riley, Bob Butler, Chuck Neviath. Thanks to all of you for being here with us and everyone watching and listening online. Have a great week.